What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit BestWestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Hey. We're like in, I believe we're 5 years into building bolt centerfire or bolt action centerfire rifles today with several different models under the Cascade line. And if you guys that are listening or watching and have been to a sporting goods store, you've probably seen the CBA Cascade because it is a very easy on the pocketbook, centerfire. You know, we've always kind of been known off the sleeve here a little bit as blue collar Americans muzzleloader because our muzzleloaders are, well, they don't break the bank. And we wanted to make sure that we capitalize on the amazing manufacturing horsepower that we have as a CVA brand and also enter into the centerfire market world to bring that same scenario or that same synopsis to guys that love to hunt with a centerfire, and that's make a blue collar American centerfire rifle. And the Cascade was born under the CVA brand.
Yeah, with the success that you've had with the muzzleloader industry and how you've basically revolutionized that to get to where you are today, I can imagine a lot of those same technologies and the fit and feel of those guns is easily transferred for the most part into this Cascade lineup. And
100%.
Yeah, from looking at the website, like you guys have a lot of different models within this Cascade lineup, and let's talk about it.
You know, so when we first come out with the Cascade, the Cascade kind of falls under, so the Cascade was just a rifle 5 years ago, just the Cascade, that was it. We went to SHOT Show, which is in Las Vegas, Nevada in January, and SHOT Show stands for Shooting, Hunting, Outdoor Trade Show, if you guys are not aware of that show. It is the world's largest trade show, and that's basically where all manufacturers like ourselves show up and bring the latest and greatest and, you know, the newest of newest to introduce to dealers and buyers across the country. And so we introduced the Cascade just as a gun itself, and it becomes so popular after the first year because of its price point and its high quality for the price it takes to get it off the shelf. The Cascade now has become a series of centerfire rifles, which, you know, it's like, I guess when you have a child, you know, you have a child, you don't really know what the outcome is, you know, you do your best to teach it the best you can, but it's going to gain legs on its own and kind of go its own path through life. And that Cascade has kind of done the same thing to where it was a traditional gun or traditional hunting gun when we come out with a traditional style pistol grip, the traditional style cheek piece and all that kind of stuff. But now it is involved into here in 2024. We just introduced two models of the Cascade at SHOT Show there in Vegas this year that was a varmint hunting style gun with a heavier barrel contour and a fluted barrel, and also a long range version of that, because if you're into the centerfire world, you know, long range shooting and hunting today is a very popular thing. So we took the Cascade line from a traditional hunting gun to more that's one that's more customizable per se, with adjustable cheek piece, adjustable length of pull and all that kind of stuff. Now we got multiple different style stocks that go on them and different color camo configuration. But across the line, our number one goal, again, as a muzzleloader manufacturer and known as Blue Collar Americans Muzzleloader, we want to make sure that when we brung the Cascade out as a standalone bolt-action centerfire gun, that we brung it to be a Blue Collar Americans price point and basically throw everything at that gun that we possibly could. You know, the analogy of I'm a truck guy, so I'm a gearhead kind of guy. So talking about trucks is kind of second nature to me. But like, you can get some that don't have a lot of options that still get you to the store, and you can get some that are King Ranch with the cowhide leather and that AC heated seats and all that, heated and cooled seats and all that kind of stuff. So we wanted to make sure that when we brung the Cascade out, we threw every option at it that we could for the consumer to have everything they wanted in a gun and still be inexpensive. And by that, what I mean is we made sure that it had adjustable length of pull, which most stocks do not have that, traditional hunting stocks anyways. So we made it to where that you can pull a spacer out of the backside of the stock and shorten it by an inch, so a young person or a small frame person can shoot it. And if they grow up and get bigger and taller and lankier like I am, they can put the spacer back in it, and now they can grow with that gun, and that gun becomes an heirloom gun. So they can have it as a young person and grow with it to full adult size. But we also made sure that it had an amazing trigger assembly in it. You know, if you're a long range shooter, a really good trigger is crucial. If you have a bad trigger in a gun, meaning it's high poundage to pull back, you're never going to be an accurate shooter with a heavy trigger. So we made sure that it had the best trigger in it that we could put in it. One that we manufacture ourselves in-house, and it's fully adjustable. So now you have adjustable length of pull. Now you have adjustable trigger assembly. And in most traditional guns, they have a hinge floor plate. Basically, you click a button on the bottom of the trigger guard and the floor plate just swings down. A lot of people don't like that because it is sometimes cumbersome to load and unload per se. So we made sure that when we built this gun, it come with a drop magazine. So not only does it have adjustable length of pull, adjustable trigger semi, it also has a drop magazine that you click a button, the magazine falls out the bottom, which typically is an upgrade. For this gun, it's a factory option. Working our way forward, you know, if you're a guy out west or you're a predator guy, you're going to hunt on the ground and you're going to hunt with a bipod. Most guns, hunting style, come with one sling swivel stud. So you have to jeopardize either running a bipod and attaching a sling to it somehow. We built the Cascade where it has two sling swivel studs, one forward for your bipod, one further back for your sling. So you can have a bipod and a sling at the same time. Typically not together does that happen unless you customize that, but we built it as a factory option. And then lastly, you know, the world today of of everybody running suppressors, or affectionately called a can. Everybody wants to do that today, and have a having a threaded barrel to do that, or to run a muzzle brake. A lot of times you'd have to take your gun, once you bought it, take it to a gunsmith and have him thread the barrel to where you could do that. But we decided to do that from the factory also. So basically every option you could want on a gun, we put on the CDA Cascade from the factory. And when I say from the factory, I just want to make sure that everybody understands that we outsource not one piece of a CDA Cascade. We make everything on that, from the rubber buttstock to the thread protector that screws on the end of the barrel to protect your threads. We make everything in-house, even down to the trigger shoe, which is the part your finger touches, and the sears inside that trigger assembly. So we manufacture and maintain production and quality on every piece on that gun. And that's how we can make such an amazing rifle with so many amazing features that still doesn't burn your pocketbook down for a blue-collar man.
Yeah, that's impressive. So when I come into the website, like the first thing that pops off into me as a consumer is the price point. So when I'm thinking of a long range hunting rifle, I'm thinking of double the price or more for what you guys are offering the Cascade long range hunter.
And that's a I feel that as a company man, that's a feather in our cap. And that's that comes from our ability to manufacture everything in house and not outsource none of it. So we control the cost of each product or part that goes on that gun, the stock, the butt pad, the spacer, the screws, the trigger, everything. And we make the barrels, the actions, the bolt handle. We make everything in house. So nobody else gets their hand in a hat to increase the price or the cost of that gun, so that we keep it affordable for you, for everybody.
Yeah, and that's a great strategy. Now, was that an easy transition from the muzzleloaders? Because you guys have been in the muzzleloader market since 1971. So did you already have those capabilities to do all of that, or did you have to add that to the building?
You know, so we build all of our barrels for our muzzleloaders. So basically, we just had to change up the machine a little bit that we build our barrels for the muzzleloaders. Obviously, they're bigger diameter, bigger hole in the middle. So we just had to kind of change tooling up, but it wasn't a big stretch for us. Like literally we thought about it 6 years ago, and then 5 years ago we introduced the gun, because our muzzleloaders, we manufacture the barrels, the actions, the stocks, the butt pads. So we're already doing that in general anyways. So we just tweaked our molds a little bit to make it a bolt action setup. It's a pretty easy transition for us, you know, and our quality was already there because we were already manufacturing all that stuff anyways in-house.
Okay, so you've got the long range hunter, and you've made this transition in to with multiple models. So then you've also got the CVA Scout, which is like a single shot, probably a real lightweight gun.
Oh my gosh, bro. Let me tell you. So the Cascade is amazing, and it is a very hot item because it's a quality piece for not tear your shirt off kind of price. But the hunting seasons across the country now are morphing a little bit to where that, obviously, we're a muzzleloader manufacturer from the beginning. It's that we're purist in that point. But a lot of these states are changing their rules and regulations to where that now muzzleloading season is what I knew growing up has now become primitive weapon season.
Yep.
Okay. So this primitive weapon season is basically the criteria is a cartridge built prior to 1895. And basically that means in layman's terminology, straight wall cartridges, okay? 350 Legends, 450 Bushmasters, 444 Marlins, 44s. There's a whole list of them a mile long. But a lot of these states are changing. And I'm going to say this jokingly, but it's kind of a money grab for the states because it gets more people involved in those primitive weapon seasons because they don't have to hunt with a muzzleloader, because some people just don't like to hunt with a muzzleloader. Obviously, we talked about this before. You yourself may be little bit not so inclined to hunt with a muzzleloader until our other podcast that we did. But, if a guy wants to hunt a muzzleloader /now, primitive weapon season, he can go buy a CDA Scout, which is a single shot break open style centerfire. And with the correct cartridge in that, straight wall, he can hunt during the primitive weapon seasons and now partake in what used to be a muzzleloading season. So in general today, as we're filming and recording this podcast, I would say the Scout is probably the hottest darn thing we've made in a long time because of all these states swapping seasons over.
Really?
Oh my gosh, man. We can't make a Scout 350 Legend fast enough. I mean, like, literally and physically, we can't make a Scout 350 Legend fast enough.
Man, you can't beat that. So I picked up a 350 Legend for my stepson. Because of Ohio, you have to utilize a straight wall cartridge just like that.
Bang.
And and what I noticed from right off the bat was the gun that I got him fit me great, but it was so long for him that when he shouldered it, he just wasn't comfortable with it. So it's either we're on a bench, we're on a rest to shoot, or we didn't get to shoot it. So,
well, that's the thing about the CVA Scout too, because again, when we built the Cascade, we wanted to throw everything at it that we could to make it user-friendly and fit the end consumer from youth to top end. And, you know, as a youth, kids start out with, you know, H&Rs and things like that. Well, that gun went away. And the Scout fills that void that H&R left behind. So the Scout, yes, can fit you, can fit me, but also can fit a young individual too, because it also has a stock that we build in-house that we build to where you can remove the spacer in the back, put the butt pad back on it, and now it fits a youth or a young lady that's a little less vertical or a little vertically challenged per se, a little short lady per se, a short gal. So we want to make sure it fit everybody's body type. And now you can buy a Scout that for your stepson, like you said, that he can shoot that. And as he grows through his life, he can take that spacer that you took off, put it right back on the gun, put the butt pad back on. And now that gun has become a lifelong gun.
Yeah. And for somebody that's looking to invest in a gun for a child to have that family heirloom, like there's no better option than having an adjustable gun. Cause I remember the guns that I got as a kid, they weren't adjustable. So now when I pick them up, I'm all scrunched up and I'm trying to shoot it. And it's just such a tiny, ergonomically incorrect weapon for me to enjoy. Whereas
I'm sure you're an archer. So, you know, if you buy a bow that the draw length is wrong, you're never going to be accurate with it. Therefore, you're not going to be effective with it. Therefore, your trips in the field won't be as successful with it. So therefore you may burn out on it. My wife is a great scenario. My wife is 5'2". Years ago when we were buying guns for her, she was always kind of way back on the gun. The length of pull was wrong. And she was specifically turkey hunting, and she'll probably kill me for this, but for years, she couldn't hit a turkey if it was laying on the end of the gun barrel, because it didn't fit her. She's missing the darn thing all the time because she was way back on the gun like this here. And she kind of got to where she didn't want to turkey hunt because she got tired of missing turkeys. And I'm like, you know what? All right, we'll fix this mess. So we cut the darn buttstock down, ruined the gun, but the gun fit her. And then she was, boom, right back into turkey hunting because she loved turkey hunting. She just didn't like missing because she had a gun that didn't fit her. So now in the CVA side of things, pretty much every gun we make it to where it's adjustable to where it can fit anybody that wants to walk up and get it and go hunt with it. And that way they can be more effective in the field. They can enjoy the time in the field, which is going to make them a forever hunter. You know, the last thing you want to do is be like my wife and just get discouraged and want to stop hunting because of missing, you know?
Yeah. So I don't usually share like the bad side of things too much on the podcast, but from my personal experience, like when I was 6-7 years old, like I was exposed to a lot of guns, more so than what a lot of kids are. So I got to shoot a lot. Well, the day came and this guy had a poke stock 16 gauge, and here I'm 7 years old and not a very big kid. Does that? I couldn't shoulder it. So my dad didn't make the best choices in life. He said, "You put the gun under your shoulder or under your armpit." He said, "I'll hold the barrel down. That way it doesn't kick as hard."
Oh, yeah. Here we go.
Yeah. Well,
we all got stories.
10 stitches later, I'm at the hospital and we figured out that wasn't a good idea. So if you can't shoulder that gun, if your kid cannot shoulder that weapon, don't shoot it. Don't pull that trigger. Because that hammer came back, cracked me between the eyes, split me wide open. It was not a good day for him or me because my mom was mad.
I guarantee you not. So because of situations like that, you know, we want to make sure that that everything in our lineup, you know, fits the end user. And we want to make sure that these guns last forever and that they continue through the life cycle of a human being. Because I know that, you know, I'm a hoarder of firearms. And, you know, I look back at the guns that I used when I was a kid that I still have today, and they are like, I cherish them. Did I get other ones since then? Absolutely. But, you know, I want to make sure, and we want to make sure as a brand, that when you get these guns, you can use them until you just want another one.
Yeah, that's the things with guns. If you own one, then you want all of them.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%.
So when I'm looking,
150 is better.
Oh, absolutely. You just got to buy another bigger gun safe.
Yeah. But,
so if I'm ready to buy a Cascade from CVA, how do I choose which model is right for me? Because you've got a long range hunter, you've got the Varmint Hunter, you've got a SR80 XT, and I just keep scrolling through and there's more options. So which one is right for me?
Well, you know, it really comes down to fit and feel and what you're going to end up doing with it. You know, I really love the LR8s, the long range hunter that we introduced here this year. I like the adjustable cheek piece. You know, again, referring back to the archer world, you got to knock the right way, the same way, repetitively to be accurate. And with today's modern optics, you know, optics just went bonkers the last couple of years. And now people are running, you know, we went from years ago running 3x9x40mm or 3x9x40mm scopes, which was 3x9 adjustable variable rate of adjustability or magnification. And then it had a 40 millimeter bell end or the end out there on the end. But now we're running 34 millimeter tubes, big honking adjustable turrets, 56 millimeter. I mean, it's like a spotting scope now. So when you purchase these big honking scopes to shoot further and see clearer, what it actually does is over time, as those scopes get bigger, your cheek well changes because you got to get taller on the gun. So if you do that, and you don't have an adjustable cheek piece, your cheek well changes, which is going to change your accuracy. So I like the long range hunter because it has the adjustable cheek piece. So I can make it fit me exactly, or you can lower the cheek piece and make it fit you exactly. Again, it refers back to our adjustability and make sure that we fit every customer because every body has a body that's totally different. Not everybody's a doppelganger where we're all exactly alike kind of scenario. So I like that long range hunter for that reason. Downside is it does add some weight to it. So really at the end of the day, the Cascade, as far as the drivetrain or the working guts of a Cascade, they're pretty much all the same. It basically comes down to fit, feel, and cosmetics. So if you look at the Cascade, and I'll call it the OG, the original Cascade that we come out with before it was a series or a family of guns. Traditional looking stock, traditional barrel, no flutes, still has all the stuff that we talked about earlier, all the adjustability and drop mag and swivel studs and thread and all that kind of stuff. Still has all that, but it has less stuff, like they don't have the flutes, they don't have the adjustable cheek piece and so on and so forth. And as we progressed through the line, we went to the Cascade XT. The XT is a little more bells and whistles. Still traditional gun per se. When it fits in your hand, you feel it. Still feels traditional, but it has flutes on it. So we fluted it to make it a little bit more fancier if somebody wanted something over a work truck version per se. And then as we progressed through the line, you know, we went to the LRH, which is new. The SR80 is new. The Varmint Hunter or the VH is new. And the Varmint Hunter, you know, we can kind of separate that out of the category of the Cascade a little bit, even though it still falls under the name. It's a little bit different because it's designed specifically for varmint hunting. It's got a heavier contoured barrel on it. That way the gun is heavier. And typically for predator hunters, they want to stay on the target and acquire the target after the first shot. So we made that gun with a heavier contoured barrel so there's not as much muzzle rise upon ignition of the, or squeeze of the trigger, ignition of the round. So that gun is chambered in like 223, 243, 204, things like that. So if you're that guy, you know exactly which one you need if you're a varmint guy. And in the varmint world, or in the hunting world in general, varmint hunting has become, it's kind of become a standalone thing. you know, predator control is, or predators are in theory out of control across the country. And there are guys that I know through the Midwest and through the West that's all they do. They're coyote dudes. They're predator guys through and through. So we built that gun specifically for them. But the other Cascade models that we talked about, it just comes down to which fit in your hand better. And when you put it up to your arm and your shoulder, which one fits you better? But again, the working mechanics of them are all the same. So it comes down to what fits you better and which caliber offering that you prefer.
Okay. All that makes a lot of sense, and it's easy to distinguish like why you have these lineups. And we've already told that the long range hunter seems to be like aesthetically, like that's the one I'm the most drawn to with that.
Oh, it's pretty.
It's a beautiful gun, especially at the price.
Yeah. Are you on the website right now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So one of the coolest things to me for our lineup for 2024, we traditional have been a camouflage stock design. And we have always been a partner with Realtree Outdoors, Realtree Camouflage, because they're a Georgia-based company. We're a Georgia-based operation. It just makes sense because we're the hometown crowd, and I'm a Realtree guy through and through and have been for a long time. But these solid color stocks are becoming a thing. So we introduced a base green stock in the original Cascade this year, which is kind of new for that Cascade OG lineup. But if you're looking at the LRH, that new black stock with gold webbing on it.
Yep.
Oh my gosh, bro. That thing looks like it is a $2,000 centerfire bolt gun, and it ain't. But that the correlation of the new Cerakote color that we painted the barrel correlates with the coloration on the black stock, and it is unbelievable sexy curb appeal on that sucker.
Hey, let me interrupt this podcast episode real quick and talk about huntinggeardeals.com. If you're interested in saving money on hunting gear, there's no better place on the web. Basically, what huntinggeardeals.com does is scour the web for discounted products on hunting gear and shares them in one convenient location. So type in huntinggeardeals.com in your web browser and sign up for the daily deal email so you never miss a deal. Now, back to the show.
I'm as proud of that thing as anything we've built so far.
Yeah, I mean, that's a beautiful gun. And when I said the aesthetics of this gun looks great, that's exactly the color scheme that I was looking at and gun.
It's going to be hot. I tell you, we're just now, of course, we introduced it to the world in January, and we just now sent out the first one. I actually saw shipping on one here yesterday that I sent to one of my pro staffers, and he got the first black one that had come in, or black one with the gold webbing that had come into our facility there in Georgia. And I'm like, dude, you lucky rascal, you got the first gun and it's the awesomest looking thing ever, man.
Yeah. So as far as from aesthetics, like I've noticed a trend in recent years, and as a manufacturer, you probably are way more close to what actual trends and how things are selling, but shorter barrel lengths because people are adding silencers to the end of their barrel.
Yep. So, especially today, and of course, this is really going to date this podcast, and I apologize for that. But like, if you have looked into cans, if you've looked into cans in years past, it could take up to 18 months to get a suppressor back after it goes through the federal background check and all that stuff. Bro, I just did one the other day and got it back in 3 days. Three days.
That's awesome.
So I'm hearing everything from 3 to 5 days right now. So the suppressor craze right now is out of control because the feds finally figured out how to process the paperwork, apparently. And of course, working in the manufacturing side of the hunting industry, we work with and know a lot of folks in suppressor manufacturing. And I actually had a conversation with one gentleman this morning, and they're 9 months backlogged on orders on suppressors right now because these suppressors are coming back so fast and everybody wants to shoot them. And rightly so. The people that are not educated think they are silencers. They're not silencers. They're suppressors. They actually suppress the sound, but they're not whisper quiet. They still have a report to them. But for hearing purposes, at the length of time that I've been in the hunting industry, one of my favorite words is hunt. I say hunt a lot because I can't hear what people tell me because I shot for years with a muzzle brake and no ear protection or just a gun in general with no hearing protection. If you're not running a suppressor day, you're kind of crazy because they are coming back so quick and it is a absolute joy to shoot. But because of that trend, we are, depending on caliber, bumping down to short barrel versions. We have a Cascade SB that we've not talked about, at Cascade short barrel. And it is in, pretty much everything from, Six Creed and down. If you get into the 300 Win mags and stuff like that, a short barrel, really limits the capability of what a Magnum gun can do. So you do have to have longer barrels for them, but for Creedmoors and 308s and 350 Legends and 223s, we chamber in short barrel guns because people are running these on suppressors. And that is absolutely the trend in the market today.
Yeah. So when I take a scroll through and I'm been looking at all these models that we've been talking, and seems like the original Cascade is offered in the most calibers, which would make sense since it was sure. the original backbone of that. And then you've specialized calibers to the rifle design to ensure that when you're choosing the correct frame or fit or feel for that gun, you have a caliber that is best suited for that style of hunting.
Correct.
So,
you know, and the most popular thing, you know, of course, as a centerfire, well, so as a muzzleloader manufacturer, we only have to worry about two calibers, 50 and 45, in our break opens, and we do make a 40 caliber in another bolt action muzzleloader that we make. But in general speaking, the centerfire world obviously becomes more complicated because there are a bunch of centerfire calibers out there, and everybody's always trying to make the newest and latest, greatest, hottest caliber out there. And at this time, you know, the 7PRC is the hottest thing since sliced bread. Everybody wants a 7PRC, and we're always a little slow to the game to bring out new caliber offerings. And it's not because we're slow at doing what we're doing. It's strategic to where that we want to make sure those calibers are going to stick around before we retool and rechamber in a new round and then build something that doesn't stick. But the latest and greatest is the 7PRC. It has stuck. So we started offering a couple of those Cascade models that you're looking at on the website. We started offering them in 7PRC for 2024. And I would say outside of 350 Legend and a 6.5PRC, the 7PRC is the hottest thing that we've ever made.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you sometimes get that with the craze, and we've seen that with the 6.5 Creedmoor, and everybody was like, oh, my God, and then the 6.4, then it's like, oh, you're a 6.5 guy, like, you're not a real hunter unless you shoot.
Oh, my God, bro.
So, we'll see what happens with the 7PRC, and we'll go from there, I guess.
You know, it is hard to say, you know, the Creedmoor was hot, and as a manufacturer, we were one of the first to ever chamber a 6.5 Creedmoor way back in the day. And it is a great round, but it does lack a little juice, a little sauce in the back. The 6.5 PRC is definitely taking hold. Ammo is more readily available. It's just as accurate as the Creedmoor, and that's why the Creedmoor has stuck around and been so popular, because it just shoots. I don't care what you feed it. It just shoots and shoots really well. It makes a bad shooter look pretty darn good, to be honest with you. And that's the reason it's kind of stuck around. But the 6.5 PRC is kind of what the Creedmoor was missing, because it's got the gas behind it and the speed behind it, but with the same projectile that is super accurate. And for me, for hunting mule deer and anything down below that, I'm a 6.5 PRC guy. I haven't jumped on the 7PRC stuff. I like the 6.5 PRC. I think if I'm just kind of dissect this here a little bit, you know, again, we kind of talked about that one gun is good, 50 is better. I'm the hoarder kind of guy, and I want a bunch of calibers. I want a bunch of different guns. But if you're a one gun guy, and you want a gun to hunt whitetail, and you want a gun to go hunt elk, which just makes a ton of sense. It's easier on your budget. And if you become familiar with a gun and it becomes a part of your body and you don't have to think about what you're doing with it when it's time to go to work, if you're a one gun guy, the 7PRC by far is the better choice, because it is capable of elk and it's very capable of whitetail. 6.5 PRC, on the other hand, is not a really a great. I mean, this comes back to the Creedmoor argument that you hear all the time on the World Wide Web. The 6.5 PRC is marginal for elk. I know a bunch of guys that hunt elk with a 6.5 PRC, but I know a bunch of guys that would argue that it's too soft, not enough gas behind it. So I typically keep a 6.5 PRC for muley down, and then I go into a 300 PRC for elk stuff out in Montana, Wyoming, and stuff like that. But again, I like multiple guns. But if you're a one gun guy, the 7 PRC is by far the best choice in the world right now today. And we finally started chambering in it. I say finally, it just came out last year, but we waited about 6 months before we tooled up for it just to make sure it was going to stick. And I would say right now, the hottest thing going out our door is Cascades and 7 PRC.
I can't beat that. So if I'm getting ready to pick up a rifle, or if I'm at the range, like, how do I know that I'm optimized for this weapon as far as the fit and feel? Like, when I shoulder this weapon, how should it feel? And I know there's some customization to it, and you may not have a good answer for this, but as far as where my cheek is and how I'm lined up, and there's a lot that goes into that, even though it seems like a simple process. Like, do you have any tips on like how that weapon should feel and fit to that consumer?
Well, you know, most of it comes down to the biggest concern is length of pull. And basically length of pull, and if you can see this here on my arm, so length of pull goes from the crease of your elbow here on the inside to the tip of your trigger finger. And if that is incorrect, then it's like shooting a bow that's too big or too long for you. So you got to understand what your length of pull is, first of all. So it's great to understand that and then study the firearm that you have interest in to make sure that it's capable of fitting you with the proper length of pull. And that's why we make ours adjustable, so that it does have that capability of trying to fit pretty much everybody across the board. But it also comes down to your cheek weld and what kind of optics that you plan on running. You know, like on a long range hunter, people are going to be running, you know, 5 to 25 by 50 millimeter optics with magnification from 5 to 25, because they want to shoot long range, which is going to make that scope taller, bigger. And your cheek is a big piece. I mean, this is all your cheek, but really your cheek is right under your cheekbone right here is where you want to weld that gun to. So if you kind of bring up on your gun and a 44 millimeter scope, a 30 millimeter tube with a 44 millimeter objective lens allows that scope to stay closer to the gun, and that's what you plan on running, you need to make sure that your cheek weld fits that properly. But if you plan on running a really big honking scope with a giant bell end, like a 56 millimeter bell end, then you probably need to make sure that you find one that has an adjustable cheek piece so you can keep that cheek weld the same through a repetitious shooting cycle per se. So it kind of comes down to, number one, what you like as far as what is sexy in your hands, what it looks like, because obviously we buy camouflage because we think it looks good, not because it's more effective than one or the other. I've killed turkey in khaki pants before, you know. So it comes down to, number one, what you like, what looks good to you, and then what fits you properly, which is based on the optics you also plan on choosing for that piece of equipment.
Okay, so when it comes to optics, like, there's a lot of options out there, but is it easy to find like a generalized optic to fit all the Cascade lineups, whether regardless of caliber, or should you have a caliber specific scope, like whether it's 308 and you have a 308 matched scope for that?
You know, so always a really questionable topic is finding that perfect middle of the road glass that will run across every piece. And in theory, most of the stuff that I run is always going to be a 4 to 16 is kind of the general rule of thumb. Even with a long range gun, I can shoot long range on a 16 power magnification. So 4 to 16 with a maximum of a 50 millimeter bell end, preferably to keep the gun or keep the scope low to the gun, would be a 44 millimeter objective lens. And everybody talks about, you know, field of view and light gathering ability. The argument is a 50 millimeter objective lens will gather more light than a 44 millimeter objective lens. Totally not true. You can have a funnel. Let's think mechanically here. You can have a funnel that's this big okay? But the hole that it goes through is this big when it comes out the bottom. Or you can have a funnel that's this big on top versus this big, but have the same hole that it's got to go through. They're both going to eat light or both going to eat oil the same amount because the pinch point is the tube that it's got to go through. Okay. So when people talk about, oh, I want to get a big giant objective lens so I can have more light so I can hunt later in the day. Not always the case. It's actually based on the tube size. So in tube size today, we have 1-inch tube, 30-millimeter tube, and 34-millimeter tube. So the bigger the tube, the more light it can gather. So typically I run a 44-millimeter objective lens on a hunting scope with a 30-millimeter tube. That way that I have a big tube, but I don't have a huge bell end out here on the end that makes the scope get way off the gun. And I can run a 44-millimeter objective lens on a traditional CVA Scout, single shot break open. I can run that same scope on a Cascade OG, or I can run it on a LRH with adjustable cheek piece.
Okay. So when you're,
and you keep the same cheek well too.
Okay. So when I'm looking to mount this scope to the gun, there's different rises of the scope rings.
Yep.
And looks like I might be, with depending on the model and stuff, I might be able to get away with a medium or even a low depending on where I'm at. Like, what's the difference as if I wanted the bell end of that rifle scope, so the end of that scope, the largest section of it, to be
the big end,
an eighth of an inch off the barrel or a quarter of an inch off the barrel? Will it perform any differently depending on how close it sits to the barrel?
You perform differently.
I perform. Okay. Can you walk us through that?
Cheek well changes. If it's an eighth of an inch off the barrel or a quarter an inch, if it's a quarter an inch per se, then you got to come up another eighth inch higher, which gets you off your proper cheek weld.
Okay.
That's where the adjustable cheek pieces have modernized today's stocks is no matter how, well, you'd never want it far off the barrel, but no matter how big that scope is, you can adjust that cheek piece to keep that cheek weld. No matter how tall you got to climb up off the gun, you can adjust that cheek piece up to you. But for traditional hunting guns that don't have those adjustable cheek pieces, you definitely want to try to keep, a low ring and a smaller bell end to keep it close to the gun. That way you're down on the gun, not trying to do this here. Again, your cheek is a big piece. This is a chin weld. This is a cheek weld. If you got a scope that's too far up off the gun, you have a chin weld, and that's your chin is going to move here where your cheek is not going to move. Okay. So you're more apt to be not repeatable or consistent in your long range shooting abilities with a chin weld. So the closer you can keep it, the better, or have an adjustable cheek piece that you can bring it up to your cheekbone.
Okay. That answers my question there. Now, if I can jam that into where it touches, the scope actually touches the barrel, that's probably a no-no, right?
Bad thing. Yeah. You know, the old rule of thumb is if you get a sheet of paper in it, you're good. But one thing, when you ignite a centerfire rifle, there's something in the barrel that's called harmonics or barrel whip. And that's basically upon ignition, the barrel does this. You can't see it. You can't see it whipping as it's going down, but it does have a barrel whip to it. So there is going to be some movement of the barrel, not loose, but actual give, heave and hoe per se of the barrel. So you do have to have a bit of leeway in between your barrel and the bell end of your scope just to make sure you don't have issues with barrel whip touching that.
That's great information to know. And that's kind of what I want to do is kind of give some of those tips that you were able to provide with the muzzleloader stuff and incorporate this into traditional centerfire rifles. Now, CVA has a single shot, and they also have a bolt action. Mm-hmm. Are we going to see a semi-auto in the future, or are we happy where we're at right now?
You know, the thing about the semi-autos is traditionally they're not as accurate as a bolt gun because the bolt, when it goes in, the locking lugs pull down when you roll the bolt down, and it actually, we'll say, compresses or pinches that in there, and it's going to be the same. It's repeatable. Whereas your semi-auto, it's bang, cycle, bang, cycle, bang, cycle. And so a lot more moving parts there, not as accurate. You never see a competitive shooter or a long-range record holder shooter kind of dude out there shooting a semi-automatic. So I would imagine that we never step into that market.
Okay. Okay. So what, if you can share with us, what's on the horizon for 2025 and further? Is it calibers? Is it what's going to change with this Cascade lineup? Because it seems like you have a little bit of everything already.
We do have a little bit of everything, and that's a great thing about innovation. You know, like we talked about in the other podcast, you know, 15 years ago, we never thought we'd see muzzleloaders where we're at today. But it's amazingly enough that we continue coming up with new things and new ways to make these guns better, faster, more accurate. So there is some pretty cool stuff coming up on the horizon for 2025. I cannot divulge that today. If I did, I'd have to put you in a hole over here somewhere or another. But there is cool stuff coming. We're already into like 2027 with prototyping, things like that. And part of what I do here for the brand, outside being head of influencer relations, I'm also subject matter expert for our brand. So I get to do a lot of the road mapping and product development behind the scenes. So I wear two hats. One of my hats is in front of the scenes, like what we're doing today. And then another hat I wear, because of my longevity in the hunting industry and the muzzleloading field per se, or firearms industry and muzzleloading field, is I do some product development and road mapping for our brands for the future. And like I said, we're already into 2027 of new stuff. And it just amazes me how we keep coming up with more stuff to make things even better.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of information that I've gathered just from the influence that you've had on the muzzleloader market from their previous episode, and then now it's transcribing into centerfire rifles and things of that nature. And for me, at the end of the day, like I don't want to spend $2,000 on a long-range hunting rifle.
No, man, and our long-range hunter comes in less than $1,000, and I guarantee you couldn't build it for that. And again, we have amazing manufacturing operation, and we touch everything on it, so we control that. And at the end of the day, our goal is to make sure that we build the best darn rifle that you can find on the market anywhere today that is at a price that will not tear your pocketbook apart.
Okay. Now, you've got a long-range rifle. That's what you're marketing. Mm-hmm. What are the long-range capabilities of that gun?
Oh, well, you know, so here's a great scenario. So it's not always about the fiddle. Sometimes it's a fiddle player.
Yep, exactly. So it's I will always say this bow or this gun is way more accurate than I am, because yep. I know I'm not the best.
Yep. So these guns today are easy 1,000-yard guns. I would take a 6.5 PRC right now and shoot it at a mile before you say don't do it. That's 1,760 yards. And literally with the barrel manufacturing process that we have for these CVA Cascades, and the adaptability and adjustability of the scopes today, the modern glass that we run, a mile's not out of the question. I can guarantee you I could ring steel a mile before you say don't do it. 1,000 yards, easy. I mean, dude, I could have, if you've never shot 1,000 yards, I could literally have you shoot a gun at 100, and within 5 shots, I could have you at 1,000.
Okay, so I've never shot a deer out past 100 yards. I literally had to stalk up and close the distance because I'm like, I'm not shooting this deer more than 100 yards. I'm not doing it. Yeah, so I got my gun up, and I was like, okay, 100 yards, we're good. And that's what I never did. I never got into the long-range side of it. But as I've gotten a little older and not necessarily for the hunting side, I just want to have that capability of saying that I'm capable of shooting a target and ringing steel at those longer distances.
Bro, I'm telling you, man, my whole life has rotated around shooting a muzzleloader 100 yards. But like I said, in 2016, I picked up a centerfire for the first time in, I don't know, 25 years or something. And it is so addictive. You know, people talk about, oh, be a better hunter, shoot them closer, get closer, all this kind of stuff. And I don't disagree with that. But at the end of the day, when you're out shooting steel and plinking per se, to be able to understand the wind data, the parallax of the projectile, which is your climb and fall, when the bullet comes out of the end of the barrel, it's climbing, and at some points it's going to reach its maximum and then start falling. And to be able to mathematically put all that together and be able to hit an 8-inch piece of steel 1,000 yards, bro, that's fun. I don't care who you are. It's fun.
Yeah, it's not, the gun is capable of doing it, but it's also the shooter that's got to perform and overcome the environmental conditions that you're faced with in order to do it.
Yep. You know what? I think one of the biggest things too, and in we do a lot of long range shooting classes per se. One of the biggest things that, that I see that is a downfall to long range shooting in general is traditionally with a traditional hunting rifle, you have the thumb over the back of the back of the buttstock, goes over the top of the cone, and you grip it, hold it in place. But if you transfer your thoughts of archer hunting into hunting with a centerfire to shoot long range, when you grab a bow's riser, do you grip the crap out of it and white knuckle it, or do you shoot it open palm?
You're open palm, so you don't torque it.
Money. So a centerfire rifle, we talk about the fiddle and the fiddle player and the gun being better than you and this and that and other. In these long range classes, you know, the, like the first time if I'm on a bench with somebody and they get up to the gun and they run the bolt forward and engage it and safety comes off and they're on the gun and I'm like, what are you trying to choke the gun to death? Do you think it's going to run off down the road somewhere? You're trying to tear the stock off it. I can see your knuckles are white as snow right now. Why are you doing it? Well, that's the way I was taught to do it and totally get it. But the guns are not going to get up, run off. They ain't going to jump up and pop you in the face. So the one of the biggest corrections that I see to make a person a better shooter, at whatever distance that is number one, instead of the thumb, your thumb going over top of the back of the stock like that, which again, that's how we were all taught by our dads. You actually bring your thumb back over the top of the gun and lay it on the right side. So in the palm of your hand, you have two fatty muscles. You have this one and you have this one. If you're on your gun per se, you roll your thumb over. Now your fatty muscle is on top of the gun and this fatty muscle here is on the side of the gun. So you got one pushing down and one pushing left. If you're righty, like myself. So they're fighting each other. So if you roll your thumb over to the right side of the gun, now both fatty muscles are on the right side of the gun. Now they're not fighting each other. Now you won't torque the gun. Yep. That then, step alone will get somebody to 1,000 yards faster than you can shake a stick at.
Okay. And then to offset that weight, then you've got the butt of the gun rested against the cheek.
Yep.
So you've got a stronger, stable anchor point.
Stronger, stable anchor point, and you don't have two muscles fighting each other, one on top, one on the side. Thumb to the right, grip the gun with the front, and let it sit right here in the palm. Both muscles are on one side, and they're not going to fight each other, and you're not going to torque the gun. Because if you torque the gun, no different than a bow, at 100 yards, probably not going to make a hill of beans difference. But if you want to stretch that out and make the gun and caliber choosing capable of what it's capable of doing, then you obviously have to hold that gun correctly, repeated the same way every time. And if you grip that gun and you move upon ignition, that gun moves a 1/16 of an inch. I mean, that much. At 1,000 yards, that's 4 feet. So don't grip the gun. Both muscles on one side, thumb on right-hand side of the gun.
Okay. So if you can't grip, you're not gripping the gun, this gun has recoil. So how much of that recoil do we need to control in order to maintain accuracy? Because that's what I see a lot of people do. They're locked in and they don't want the gun to basically have any recoil, thinking that it's going to shoot more accurately. Mm-hmm. What's the truth?
The truth is I shoot a 300 PRC, which is it's bad medicine for any big game animal. And I shoot a 300 PRC the same way I shoot a 6.5 Creedmoor. I mean, you're going to feel half more felt recoil on a 300 PRC than you would a 6.5 Creedmoor, but they're not going to jump up and run off down the road when you squeeze the trigger. They're not going to go anywhere. Don't grip them. Left hand never on a gun. Left hand always stays under the butt of the gun. Right hand side, thumb on the right hand side, don't grip over it trying to hold it in place. They're not going to run off.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So,
yep. Kind of just mechanically thinking through the process of the same way that the archer would shoot a bow, you know, just methodical processes about not torquing and not gripping and all that kind of stuff. It needs to transfer over to the centerfire as well. And now that we are building a long range hunter in a Cascade model or in the Cascade family, it's even more important that people know the proper shooting tips or tricks, if you will, for repeatable long-range shooting, because the gun is capable of it. Now we just got to make sure the shooter is.
Yeah, and that's always been my downfall when it comes to guns, is because it was always a last-minute decision, like, oh, I better go sight the gun in. I got to hunt tomorrow. And it's just like, okay, I can hit the bullseye at 100 yards. We're good. I've never fine-tuned and exercised those skills like I have with my bow.
Mm-hmm. And the process is basically the same. And I know you don't think about it, like you said.
Yep.
I shoot it, hit the target, let's go to work. But, you know, if you're shooting a 3-inch group at 100, that gun may be capable of sub-MOA, which is sub-1-inch. Most of the calibers that we manufacture today, they're a half-MOA gun all day long, which is a half-inch group at 100 yards.
Yeah, and that is well outside of my current capabilities with a gun.
It was mine, too. I mean, I'm not going to lie. When I got into it, I mean, I was green, too. And fortunately for me, through our brand of individuals that work with us, we have a lot of ex-military individuals that work for us that help us build guns and stuff like that. And obviously they've been very well schooled on shooting technique, which shooting technique, you need to do that same technique if you're shooting 50 yards or 1,000. But if you're good at 1,000, you're going to be dadgum good at 50.
Oh, absolutely.
So I've learned from great individuals, because I'm just a redneck from Tennessee, and that likes to hunt. And I grew up gripping the heck out of an old 270 Remington. And when I got around the right people, I realized what I was doing was doable, but not to the best of my ability. There was a better way. And these guys taught me these tricks to be able to hold and cradle that gun differently than what I grew up doing, which made it super easy for me to go out and shoot a mile today. And I am not a long range shooter per se. That's not what I do. But because I know how to do it now, it makes me be able to shoot a CBA Cascade to its full potential because I know how to grip and hold that gun.
Well, I think I've got some shooting practice to do in order to put those skills to the test.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it'll change, baby. It'll change your world. I promise you. You know, and a lot of people think it's just like what you were talking about. It's tomorrow's opening day. I better go check her. But at the end of the day, you know, that gun, you know, when you're in the heat of the moment and the biggest whitetail or bull elk or mule deer walks up of your life, your mind is in 400 different directions and the wheels is falling off of everything that you've practiced. Or let's say this, not practiced. Because if you got to think about what you're doing, oh, I better hold it this way and this and that and other, because you haven't spent time practicing with that gun, then your opportunity to harvest that bull elk that cost you $10,000 and vacation time and travel cost and tags and all that kind of stuff. If you don't practice and you have to think about what you're doing during that heat of the moment, you're going to fail. But if you get out and you practice like you do a bow, yes, it's more expensive because you got to shoot your ammunition up. But if you spend time behind that gun and do repeatable things, then it becomes muscle memory. And when the time comes to perform, when the bull elk is out there at 300 yards and he's bugling his brains out and you're going berserk, your muscles will automatically do what they're supposed to do if you've spent time behind that gun shooting through the summertime.
Yep. Muscle memory.
Muscle memory, my man.
Yep. It's about going into that kill mode. Some people can, some people can't. And it's because of the preparation.
Yep. It's all about preparation, man. Success is preparation, opportunity coming together at the same time.
That's right. I was trying to think of that phrase to say, and I was like, you know what? I don't remember exactly how it went, but that's what it was. Yep. Good job. So is there anything else we should know about the CVA Cascade line if we're interested in buying a new gun this season?
You know, I think the biggest thing to me is, number one, understand and rest assured that you're not going to find anything out on the market today with a better price point for that kind of quality. But I think the biggest thing when it comes down to choosing the rifle, number one, yes, it needs to fit and feel, needs to fit your pocketbook, needs to fit you, but you also need to make sure you fit a caliber that's good for you and what you plan on doing. I'd love to see you shoot a Cascade LRH and 300 PRC because it's bad medicine. But at the end of the day, it may be a little bit too much for you. And, you know, if you have a little bit of sensitive recoil, you need to think about that when you're choosing a gun and think about the particular critter that you're going to go after. Yes, will a 300 PRC effectively harvest a whitetail? For sure. Do you need it to do that? No. So just because it's the biggest, baddest thing out there, maybe you need to, spend time studying a caliber, especially if you're going into a new caliber or want to try into a new caliber, you know, like the 7 PRCs of the world. Make sure it is something that fits what you're going to do, fits your lifestyle of what you're typically hunting, and make sure it's not overkill. Because if you shoot and it's a lot of recoil and you become recoil sensitive, then it's not going to make you be an effective shooter because you're going to be a little bit scared of the gun. So I think about make sure the gun looks good, make sure it feels good to you and fits you, but also think about the caliber offering that you're going to pick up.
Yeah, we think of target panic. You think of an archer, and then all of a sudden he just can't find it. That same principles apply to a gun as well.
We just call it something different. We call it recoil sensitivity, but at the end of the day, it is basically target panic.
Yep, every bit. And it happens.
I've seen a countless times when we're doing these shooting events where somebody will get on the gun and, man, they're like going through the process and you're like, oh, this guy or gal, they've got it. And then all of a sudden they do this. You're like, whoa, hey, you didn't squeeze the trigger yet. You're already flinching. So you know for a fact they've been on guns that were too big for them and made them a bit recoil sensitive because they were already anticipating it before they actually squeezed the trigger kind of scenario, you know. So you got to kind of walk them through the process of that. But that's the last thing you want to do is create that because that's going to make you not be an accurate shooter, you know. So always think about the caliber offering that you're going to go after. Make sure it's just not too big for what you need.
Man, it's great advice. I appreciate you, Tony, for being on the podcast today, letting us learn more about the CVA Cascade lineup.
You bet, dude. You bet. It's my honor, man. And I appreciate you, and I appreciate all the hard work you put into your podcast and the guys that are taking time out of their day to listen to this podcast. You know, we appreciate you very much too, and allowing you to give me a little bit of time to talk about a brand that I love so much and about a Cascade that I love dearly.
Okay, so if the listener is interested in learning more about a CVA Cascade, where can they find more information?
CVA.com, my man.
All right, Tony, I appreciate it. Thank you, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.